The following is a recording of the Sunday evening 6 p.m. service of Rangeville Community Church.
Hello everyone. Having a good night? Good. Well, question to begin with. Who was ever a MySpace user? Got a couple? Okay. What about Bebo? Bebo, some people are doubling up here. Well, I guess that's pretty common. Well, MySpace. You know, I hear people complaining about Facebook or social platforms. Hands up if you're a bit of a cynic. Okay, some people. I bet you there's more that won't admit it. But hey, I thought that MySpace, if you had an issue with other social platforms, MySpace caused a lot of trouble, at least in my social group in high school. The reason being, I can't remember if it was mandatory, but for whatever reason, if it wasn't mandatory, we all did this. On our profile page, you would have your top 10 or 20 friends, and you would rank them in order of how good friends they were. Which caused a lot of angst for me, because if I had somebody as my second top friend and I go to someone else's page and they have me as number 10, I'd be like, oh, that hurts. Or it could be even worse the other way around, if I had somebody lower and they had me as higher, and I was like, you see the tension there? It was a real issue with it. But the funny thing about this is that Although it's not best publicly announced, we do have a hierarchy of friends, don't we? We have some friends who we are just acquaintances with, and then we have others who, you know, we know okay, and we have a good banter with, and when we see them, we catch up on what's been happening. And then we have others who are like our true friends, who really, they know the worst of us, they know the best of us, and we can be vulnerable with them, and we can be safe with them. And those kind of friends are good friends, aren't they? They are. They're good for our health, they're good for our souls, they're good for our spirits. You often hear in Christian circles about the four ancient Greek words that describe love that you can have for someone. And there's a Greek word for friendship, for the love of friendship. Can anyone tell me what it was? Philia. Is that you, David? Oh, we'll just say it was David. Well done, David. Philia. And philia was described the word for friendship that we have. But you know, our love of friendship isn't just restricted to our friends. It can also apply to, I think a lot of people in here would say their spouse is their best friend. Or you could also have that relationship with your father or your mother or your sisters and your brother. So you can have a friendship love for other people as well. And so tonight we're talking about friendship, if you haven't guessed that already. And we're talking about David and Jonathan and their great friendship. That's an amazing story, isn't it, David and Jonathan? So I just want you guys to keep that in mind, that we don't just have to restrict this lessons that we learn from friendship to our friends, but also the friendships that we have with other people. And the other thing, before we really get going, is that, you know, if you find yourself really aching for more friendships, people that you can share life with, at Rangeville we have things called life groups, and they are just a great avenue to create friendships, to strengthen friendships. And I know in my life group, I've made new friends, and I've strengthened my friendships as well. So come see me after if you're interested in a life group. But maybe you never considered friendship a big priority when it comes to your faith. Maybe it's kind of drowned out amongst a whole lot of other commands. But I think that many of the most important commands, especially in the New Testament, were given to us in the context of friendship. There are 36 one another commands in the New Testament. That's amazing, isn't it? I'll give you a sampling of some of them. Ephesians 4:32, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ forgave you. Romans 12:10, be devoted to one another, honor one another above yourselves. Philippians 2:3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. And finally, Galatians 6:2. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So, that's just a couple of the commands that were given to one another, each other. So it's caring for each other, loving for each other, and all these types of things. But these commands were given to the church, weren't they? They were given to groups of people, the churches of the New Testament, and also, when it was in the case of Jesus, to his disciples and so on. And in those churches, in those groups of people, you would have families, you would have your mother and your father, but the bulk of the relationships in here were friendships. There were connections and relationships that people had. And so when Paul was giving these commands, he was wanting people to care for each other. He was wanting people to look after each other, and that's good. But the result of all that was stronger friendships. People who are tightly knit together, cared for and loved, and they could support each other. You know, when these commands are followed for ourselves, it results in the same thing. We care for each other more, we're better supported, our bonds are strengthened, and God knows the importance of healthy friendships, and that's why he emphasizes them. When we realize this, when we realize that God really values our friendships, we can stop thinking of friendships as an indulgence, as a lucky extra, but a key component of where we're going in the future. Here's some great nuggets from the Old Testament in Proverbs. Proverbs 18:24. One who has unreliable friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And some of you can think of situations where that would be true for yourself. Proverbs 27 verses 5 to 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Proverbs 17, verse 17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. Proverbs 12, verse 26, the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. So the Bible's big on friendships. You agree?
Yes.
Good. So it should come as no surprise to us then that when we look at science, scientists show us the same thing. I was reading a really interesting article, and I wish I could read more of it for you. I might put the link in my message mates. But here are some excerpts from it. Loneliness can be bad for a person's health. A study of more than 28,000 men published in 2002 found that the ones without strong social ties were nearly 20% more likely to die within 10 years. Regardless of their health or occupation, the lonely men in the study were especially prone to accidents, suicide, death due to heart disease. Likewise, a 2009 study of nearly 300 men and women using a free health clinic in Buffalo, New York, found that the clients with the fewest social ties were most likely to suffer from heart disease, anxiety, and depression. Good friendships seem to be especially helpful for the heart. A 3-year Swedish study of more than 13,600 men and women found that having few or no close friends increased the risk of having a first-time heart attack by about 50%. Isn't that amazing? Sad, but amazing and good, especially if we have good friendships. And there's more to this article as well. But, you know, in some ways it's obvious, isn't it? Right from the beginning, God saw that Adam was alone and he said it wasn't good. And that was in the context of a husband and wife. But still, you know, there's a bond of friendship there as well between a husband and wife. So let's turn ourselves now to perhaps the most powerful story in the Bible that depicts a good friendship. And we resume from where Matt left off last week, just after the death of Goliath. And immediately after David has killed Goliath, David goes to Saul, because Saul is really keen to find out where this guy came from, what family he belonged to. So we're reading from 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 1 to 4. I'll give you a second if you... Who brought their Bibles? Good on you guys. after David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. So this was the first of three covenants that Jonathan made with David. And I don't know what you were thinking, but when I read that for the first time, or fresh, and I read the phrase that Jonathan became one in spirit with David and loved him as himself, I'm thinking there must be some kind of backstory here, hey, because that doesn't just happen. I mean, some people believe in love at first sight, but friendship at first sight is just a little bit weird, isn't it? So, but no, I checked, and there's no childhood relationship or anything like that. They didn't play in the field together. This is the first time that Jonathan and David meet. And there's something really unique about this instant bond of friendship. And to me, I think it's God's involvement. Would you agree? It's a supernatural, almost forming of a friendship. And you know, I think we can learn from this is that we can neglect the importance that God places on friendships. You know, I think we find it easy to believe or easy to see how God's interested very much so in our vocation or perhaps our spouse, who our spouse is going to be, our husbands, our wives, or where we're going to end up in 10 years. And we might pray into that a lot. But when we think of our friends, I think there's a culture where friends are more kind of like a hobby or a luxury reserved for our own personal taste or something like that. But, you know, I think that's a mistake. We need to treat our friendships as important. They're not unimportant side stories to our lives. They are so important. And there's a hierarchical order of relationships, and maybe they won't be at the top, but they are so important. And God repeatedly in the Bible uses friendships over and over again to bring about his plan. Think about people like Ruth and Naomi, David and Jonathan, as we're talking about, Moses and Aaron, Moses and Joshua, Elijah and Elisha, Ezra and Nehemiah, Jesus and his disciples, Paul and Barnabas, Paul and Timothy. So, it's a fact that relationships you have are going to be the things that mold your personality, mold your traits. And so this is the first takeaway that I want you guys to take from tonight. It's worth taking friendships seriously. Don't be frivolous with your friendships. Don't pretend that you don't need them, that you just do them to have a bit of fun. Put energy into developing them and bringing them about. So, in the next chapter, David, quick summary, David becomes a very popular hero to the Israel people. He's a successful warrior, and the public opinion of him goes up, doesn't it? And Saul becomes jealous. He's intimidated by David, and he wants to kill David. And he's, at least this first time, he's very obvious about it. And so we'll read from 1 Samuel 19. Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Does anyone think that David coming back to Saul would be kind of awkward? Hey, Saul. It's cool that you don't want to kill me anymore. So, you know, this isn't Jonathan coming to his dad. And it's like not risk-free for Jonathan here. He's not coming to his dad and saying, ah, Dad, don't kill David. He's a good guy. It's pretty risky. In fact, only a couple of chapters before this one, in Samuel 14, Saul's planning to kill his own son, Jonathan, because Jonathan eats this honey ignorantly. He didn't know he wasn't meant to eat it. And so Saul's like, that's it. You're dead. And thankfully, the soldiers and Saul's men got in before that happened and said, no, Saul, please don't kill him. Your son's a good guy. So this was risky for Jonathan. And it wasn't the only time that Jonathan risked his life for David. He continued to do that. As Saul kept seesawing, he's like, I want to kill David. I'm going to do everything I can. And then he would be like, no, I'm not going to kill David. And in between Saul and David was this man called Jonathan, risking his life over and over. Even at one point towards the end of Jonathan's life, David was struggling in the wilderness and Jonathan went to be with him just to support him and bring him fresh hope. You know, right from the beginning, when Jonathan first saw David, he gave him everything he had, all his clothes and his sword. And, you know, I think that was symbolic for what he was bringing to the relationship. David, I'm going to give you everything I have to see God's plan in you come about. And so as we look at this story of David and Jonathan, you know, we get glimpses of what happens. And we don't, you know, we're so used to, well, I am at least, you know, we get TV shows and we get to see exactly how characters develop and all of that. But we have to remember in 1 Samuel, it's about 70 years and we're only getting the highlights here. But one thing is clear, and I think this is important, and that is what we see in David and Jonathan is that their friendship wasn't limited by the boundaries of leisure time activities. Jonathan had an interest in David's livelihood that went beyond let's hang out later and have a good time. As a friend, he spoke up for David to his father and he held himself responsible or partially responsible for David's future. Jonathan was the heir of Israel. And yet he was doing everything so that someone else, his friend, could become the king of Israel. And so I just challenge you guys, ask yourself, what's the main reason that we maintain the relationships that we have? Because my concern is that often we have friends. We have friends because we're enjoying what we're getting from them. And, you know, the truth is that that's good. It's good to enjoy time with friends and be with them. That's a godly thing. God loves that as well. But we need to realize, just like Jonathan did, that, you know, I don't only want to enjoy hanging around with David. I want to help David to become the person that God wants him to be. So, you know, we hold ourselves responsible. I think we all do for our future. We hold our own selves responsible for what's going to happen for today or tomorrow in a couple of years' time. We know that we've got some responsibility there. But, you know, let's ask ourselves, what would it mean for us to consider ourselves partially responsible for the outcomes of our friends' lives? And I'm not talking about controlling your friends or beating yourself up when your friends make bad decisions or something bad happens to them, but realizing that we have an opportunity to invest into our friends' lives. We can encourage them. We can influence them. We're a source of power for them, a source of safety. And most of us realize that God has a destiny for us, and we're excited about it. I am. And we realize that we have a responsibility to fulfill that destiny. But a true friend, like Jonathan and David, they realize that part of their destiny is helping their friend reach their destiny. Isn't that right? Part of my destiny is in helping my friends reach their destiny. And I think it's safe to say that the main destiny for Jonathan's life is to help someone else be used mightily by God. And maybe that's not all going to be exactly the same for us, but I think it's true for all of us, at least to a degree. And so, you know, that's not easy to do in the short term. Sometimes it's easier to see and be motivated by the fruit in our own lives immediately. But I think if Jonathan could, and I'm sure he does look back on his earthly life, he would say it was worth it. So that's the second takeaway for tonight. Let's take some responsibility for the destiny of our friends and the plan that God has for them. So, you would think that it would be kind of the end of the story with David and Jonathan's friendship when Jonathan and his father are killed in another battle with the Philistines. But that's not true. Their friendship affected one other really important person. And, you know, I don't know when I read 1 Samuel the first time I'd missed this, but it was refreshed to me when I was listening to John Mark McMillan. Who likes him? John Mark McMillan.
Never heard of him.
Kayleen, do you have Spotify? No, probably not. Hey, but he's good, Kayleen. Give him a Google search or something.
Buy me a CD of it.
Oh, a CD. I don't have any of those. No. But anyway, he has this song called Carbon Ribs. And it's about meth. I was going to give away the name. It's about this guy. And I want to share it with you because it summarizes the power of Jonathan and David's friendship. And it leads me to my final point. Jonathan had a son called Mephibosheth. Can you say that with me? Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. Yes. Okay, well, when the news came that Jonathan and Saul had been called, it caused a ruckus in Saul and Jonathan's families because if the king's dead and the king's son is dead, then there's probably going to be a power shift. And when there's a power shift, it kind of makes sense to kill off the other family members so there's no challenge for power later on. And indeed that did happen, although not by David's doing, but some of Jonathan's brothers got killed. So thinking she had to rescue Mephibosheth by taking him and fleeing, his nurse picked him up. But in her hurry, she dropped him and both his feet were broken. And so the implications of this was that he was disabled for life. And you know, we all know that having a disability makes things really hard and is a difficulty. But in the ancient world, even more so, because you lose your source of income, you lose your source of status. And so immediately Mephibosheth's life went from potential heir to complete lowest of the low. And so the book of Samuel doesn't mention him again until some years later after David becomes king. And with the memory of his friendship with Jonathan, David wants to honor his friend somehow, even though he's dead. And an old servant of Saul's called Ziba tells David about Mephibosheth. And we pick up the story in 2 Samuel chapter 9, verse 5. So King David had him brought to Lo Debar from his house of Machir, son of Emiel. I'm not sure if I pronounced any of that correctly. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. David said, "Mephibosheth, at your service," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David said to him, "for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan." And you can understand Mephibosheth was probably still scared, seeing as his uncles had been killed. "Do not be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table." Mephibosheth bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's steward, and said to him, "I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops, so that your master's grandson may always be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And I just want to stop there for a second because that's a huge honor. In Jewish culture, if you bring someone to eat dinner with you, that is a massive honor. You're saying that I trust this person, they are my friend. And David is inviting Mephibosheth not just to come over and eat with him once, the king of all Israel, but for every night for the rest of his life. Then Ziba said to the king, "Your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet. You know what? It's a great story, isn't it? It's a moving story. But what moves me about this short subplot is that when we see the friendship that David and Jonathan have together, complete devotion, willing to do anything for each other, doesn't your heart ache for that? Don't you want some of that for yourself, to have such a friend who would do anything for you? And I think what maybe we don't realize is that we have that. Jonathan loved his friend so much, he was willing to give his life and position for him. And Jesus, he loves us so much that he lowered himself to the very pits of shame and embarrassment so that he could die for us, didn't he? And I'm just so grateful that we have a friend like that. And we can probably think of numerous reasons why someone should reconsider loving us like that. But as soon as Jonathan laid eyes on David, he loved him absolutely. And when Jesus sees you, he saw you before you were created, and he absolutely just loved you despite all the failings that you might consider you have. And conversely, flipping the coin, David saw his friend in Mephibosheth, and despite being absolutely crippled, and I guess you could say people would have perceived him as scum, David invited this person and sat him at the king's table to eat with him every night. And Jesus does that for me. He sees my heart and he sees my failings and he sees yours and the things that you don't like about yourself, and he doesn't care. He just wants to bring you and sit in with him at his table just to be with him as one of his own sons. And so that's my final takeaway from tonight. You know, Jesus is your best friend. And that's just not a flimsy, cutesy statement. That's reality. He really, really loves you. So tonight we're having communion. And, you know, I guess because of the topic of my sermon, I've been reflecting on the fact that when Jesus first did this with his disciples, he was sitting in a room of friends. And I like to think that to some extent when he asked his disciples to continue to do communion in remembrance of him, he was asking them to do that with him as a friend. And so I guess tonight I just ask you, can we do that together and remember our friend and brother Jesus Christ?
That concludes our sermon recording. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or require further information, please contact our church office on 0746361144, or you can email us office@rangeville.com.